That was going to be my other title for this. Have you Googled your name recently? Because if you haven't, you probably should, because there's reputation at play in everything that we do, just about every web application that we use. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about that and probably wandering around a little bit. So if you get dizzy, it's probably from the Prezi, not from me, hopefully. Anyone, is everyone familiar with Prezi? You ever used Prezi before? Have there been any Prezis today? One Prezi? Yeah? Okay, that's good to hear. Okay, I'm not like a stranger. Because last year was like, oh, let's bust out the Prezi and like go along some trail. So I like Prezi because it kind of like reminds me of how I think. It's like very scattered, but at the same time, it allows you to like really drill down into a concept and create a pretty cool outline. So today I'm going to be talking about reputation systems and web communities. This is a really exciting topic for me because there's not really a whole lot being said about it. It's something that's out there and everything. Your boss might come to you and say, oh, I want to put a leaderboard on something. And you're like, well, why? So I'm going to be trying to help you guys answer some of those questions and give you an idea of the types of reputation patterns that are available, the models that you can use to apply those patterns, and then go into a few examples without getting too technical on the TPR track. So yeah, my name's Steve Hetty. I am off and My handle's Hetty, if you want to hit me up on Twitter, any questions, if we don't get to them, because I may use the full time. And then Conf Hetty, that's what I spam with. Let's dive in. Okay, so what are we going to be talking about today? So really, what is reputation? Why are we using it? What are like the building blocks of it, like the core components? And then if you want to create a reputation system, what are some of the steps that you'll want to take in order to do so? So really, what is reputation? It's essentially like a contextual value judgment that you make about a action or a history of past actions. And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So like any designer, I want to give you something visual and we'll just like dive right in and throw our guy Ted up here. So Ted just joined my community. Good guy. He got a star for that. He's like a level one user. We'll just think of him in that way. I'm looking at the 10 points on my end. He's not seeing that, but he just signed up for my site and what do you know? He's actually doing something. So good for me. He posts a photo from the pub crawl, answers a question that was posted, maybe writes a review about this venue, comments on an article, uploads a late night video from his iPhone. He does all that stuff in my one community because I just make him like that. And there you go. I've increased the points on my end, and he's now a level two user. So way to go, Ted. You've bumped up in rankings. But it doesn't end there because that would be very web 1.0. We need some community interaction. We want people to interact with Ted and say, yeah, Ted, that was a great review you wrote last night, and I loved your comment, but that obscene bull riding was flagged inappropriate. Minus 10 on that. So he bumped up a point. He's still level 2. No worries, Ted. You're still a good guy. We appreciate your contribution to our community, so we're going to keep you around. Okay, so what am I saying here? Like, really, like, what is reputation? I mean, it gets tossed around as being, like, well, what is my reputation as like a designer, or what's my reputation as a intramural football player? It's very contextual when you talk about it. But when it's used online, we're normally referring to it in the way that people making claims about things. So I'm saying something about something. So I'll skip ahead. I'll come back to that. But if I favorite a photo or I dig an article, I'm making reputation statements about those entities. I'm really just using my own stature to say something about something. But the backside of that is that people also make statements about my statements. So that's really where this whole identity comes in. Because if it was just me anonymously rating 5-star YouTube video and liking something on Facebook, that'd be one thing, but it's what happens when people react to what I'm doing and how do I use that karma, which is essentially people reputation, to affect my web application. At the end of the day, this is really hard to read, and it says, really what we're looking to do is reward high quality content. I can't even read it. Motivate quality contributors and increase visitor value to our site. So I want people that are active in my site to want to come back, to feel engaged, and I want people that have never even been to my site before to show up and still get some value from that because of the reputation models that I have in place. So really, I think you've already like kind of got this, like, yeah, Google your name. Yeah, there's a reputation statement, which really it is. I mean, Google uses PageRank, which is another form of making a claim about a site because they need to decide what's going to be at the top of their index. How do they do that? Well, they have a number of factors. There's a bunch of sessions that talk about it, and it's everywhere. We really use it to make better decisions. It is small. And reputation systems help us bring structure to chaos. Our attention will never scale, so really we need to provide more value for the time that we do have visitors on our site. So here's a application that Purdue made and uses a little bit of a reputation. Has anyone heard of Need for Feed? No one's heard of Need for Feed. I got a couple head nods. I don't need hands. It's fine. But really, like, Need for Feed's great because everyone in here that uses Twitter is on Need for Feed, but they don't realize it. Because Need for Feed is constantly scanning the HEWeb 10 hashtag, and it's pulling in all the tweets, and it's assigning every single tweet a reputation score. And from that score, it's calculating how many times the tweet's been retweeted, replied to, favorited, how long it's been up there. And we're putting all these metrics together in order to create a popularity metric. So you can go on needforfeed.com right now and see what the most popular tweets are taking place within HEWeb right now. Or you can see overall since the conferences began. And we created this tool because we thought it would provide good value for people that don't have time to sit on TweetDeck and scan the hashtag all day. So Need for Feed is, it's got like leaderboards. It's kind of like a reputation experiment, per se. Like we have, it shows all the pictures. It really pulls in a lot of these different elements into it. And much of it has to do with the reputation of individual tweets. Okay, so that's kind of like a high level, just to give you a primer on what the vocabulary is around this. I'm going to go into actually like why to use it. I was going to go into the building blocks, but I think it's important to really talk about like why you even consider using reputation in the first place, or not to, for that matter. There's a few things you need to take into account. The first one being, what are your goals for interaction? Are you looking to promote a specific feature of your site? Is there content that you want to have being refreshed more often? Are you looking to retain and engage users? I think these are pretty like common goals. That first wheel that I showed, they're very similar to these. And then the last thing is, how old is your community? Now, I'd encourage you to, as you're like listening to this, to try not to think of this in the frame of your like school's website, because while SEO and content and all that play major roles, there's probably something out there that's going to be done in education within the next few years that uses a really solid reputation metric that just hasn't been developed yet. So I'd encourage you to try and think outside of your normal like school website and think about like a community website and what are the options that, imagine all the students in your school are tied into one community website. What are the types of things that you can provide for them? So with your goals, you need to think about what's going to motivate users. Are they there for a self-interest? For an interest in other people? And maybe they're interested in the content or the object at hand. If it's a self-interest, it's like an egotistical thing, which not in a bad sense or anything, but if you're fulfilling a need to be there, so maybe you have an objective that you need to complete. Like for all you people that have like deactivated your World of Warcraft accounts, you want to go out and kill like 10 wild boars. And that's a fulfillment objective. That's a self-interest reputation model. Recognition, being recognized by your community. Leaderboards are good for this. Hey, I'm number 2 on Digs users, blah, blah, blah. Or a quest for mastery. You know, I'm trying to get everything that I can out of this service. What can I do to really absorb all that? Interest in others is kind of like altruism. If you think about like pay it forward, someone's helped me out in the past, so I'm going to help someone else out now. If it's a friend, someone that you want to help out in that way. Or Crusader, I have information that I think no one else has, and I want to share that with them. So combining those goals with the incentives is important that you start small, kind of go from there, and that you try and rate the things, not the people that are putting those things up. So even though like I or my guy Ted uploaded an obscene video, I'm still talking about the video, not about Ted. He might have the ramifications of that, but it's directed not at him, but to the content that he's put up. So I'm going to dive into some examples, because I think examples are really important, and I'm not going to just throw up a bunch of slides, because that would be a waste of your time. But some of them are going to be educational. Other ones are going to be just social sites that I'm sure hope some of you are familiar with. One of them is Yelp. Yelp is one of the most popular community-based restaurant review sites, and they do a really good job of recognizing their community for all the contributions that they make. So Here I have like Alan's profile. I can see what his rating distribution is. He's received compliments from other users based on his reviews that he's written. I see here he's also an elite user, which means he's probably submitted more reviews than other members in the site. Yelp has been known for actually throwing parties for their elite users across the entire US. So if you're an elite Yelp user, you can go to these free parties and just get wasted. And who wouldn't want to do it? He's got some friends on here. Yelp has really tried to build out like a social network around food reviews. Pretty cool. But what if you try and copy Yelp's model? What if you have a site like ChowHound? ChowHound was a site that was founded in the San Francisco Bay Area. Awesome site. People loved it because they can go on to ChowHound and say, I really liked Saddle Peak Lodge for their pastrami. Like, everything else sucked. Like, their service was terrible. Their appetizers were horrible. It took me 20 minutes to get seated. But they had the best pastramis. It was like a diamond in the rough type of site. And if you notice here, they've added stars to all of their restaurants. Kind of like Yelp. It looks a lot like Yelp. Yet, this site has like completely died. It's changed ownership a couple times since they've rolled out this model. And part of the reason why the community has left ChowHound has been because they've gone away from their original intention, which was to spur these discussions about restaurants that are the things that you wouldn't normally expect to get out of them. You know, if you love their pastrami sandwich, but you hate everything else, how do you put that into a 5-star rating? You know? Maybe if they came up with a model that's like, nominate your favorite food for this restaurant and give that a rating, well, that might have been a more applicable like model to use as opposed to just rating the entire restaurant. So this community is an example of one that's really taken a hit because they haven't applied the proper models for their community. Another site that we all know and formerly love, Digg. Digg recently went through an entire change of the way that they submit content to their site. Formerly on Digg, you can promote any content, or I should say any user could submit a story, and then it got promoted to the front page from that. Today on Digg, all stories are submitted by publishers. So it's kind of like an RSS reader, and they expect users to vote on stories that have been put in by outside sources. And you notice here, like, the top story on Digg's got like 62 digs. I just took this last night. And here back, you know, a couple months ago, like in the top digs, you got like 3,000 digs just for something that's, you know, being mentioned here. The top one's 395. It's just incredible how changing a simple pattern can completely remove your community, and it all has to do with reputation. So where have they all gone? They've all gone to Reddit. Okay. Okay, so we have an idea of like what reputation is and maybe why or why not to use it, taking our goals, what the incentives are, and then aligning that with our community. But what if we actually want to make something and put some of these patterns to use? So let's go into building some blocks. And there's probably a WordPress plugin that'll do this for you. So I can't guarantee, you know, anything original here. Okay, so reputation patterns. What are some of the ways that reputation is shown to users? Well, on my first example, I had a user that was being that had reputation being increased through levels. So this is just a way of me taking a score on my end and converting it to something that's easy to understand for them. Identifying labels is another common one where you'll get like a badge for something, or you'll receive like something kind of obscure, but it gives you an indication of where you stand in the community. And points and totals really go along those same lines. So kind of continuing that, we have achievements and awards. Here's an example from Yelp. So you get different types of compliments if someone thinks something you wrote was funny or something you wrote was insightful. Slashdot's really popular for that as well. Yahoo Sports is another good example of a site that uses reputation to show different awards. And then lastly is the leaderboard. Like, the leaderboard's one of the most common things that's thrown out there, but it's also the most commonly misused pattern in reputation by far because it's very competitive. They always say like a reputation board is only as good as N plus one users, meaning the N people that are on the board care about it, and the one guy that's not on the board that wants to get on cares about it, but everyone else feels somewhat alienated because they're not a part of it or they don't understand the meaning of it. You know, they just want to come to the site and contribute. They don't think it's about competing with one another to do something. So if you're going to use a leaderboard, you really have to think about like what you're going to measure in the first place. Like, why are you using a leaderboard? What percentage of your community is going to be on the leaderboard? If your community is 50 people and you have a 10-person leaderboard, it might make sense. You know, you want to really motivate that top 20%, good for you. If your community is huge and you have a 10-person leaderboard, well, you might run into some problems. who's going to benefit? You know, that really falls into it. And then the type of community, I'll talk about that here in a moment. So Foursquare, great example, site, loves the leaderboards, loves the accumulation. You might have been going to Starbucks for like a year, so you're like the mayor of Starbucks. If I just came out of Foursquare today and I wanted to like catch up to you, it's basically impossible because it's just using accumulation totals. So I'm kind of screwed. That's an older one. Oh yeah, I saw this. People were talking about like WooRank. They're using an aggregate score. And WooRank is very similar to Consumer Reports. If you go onto their site, they're set up almost identically once you scroll down. Okay, so when we get into the actual types of communities, and so we talked a little bit about the patterns, the labels, the levels, the leaderboards, but the actual types of communities that are available out there, or that are possible, I should say. This is called the competitive spectrum. And the reason why that is because the level of competitiveness goes up as you go across. So in a caring community, like this daily strength community for, you know, moral support and advice, probably not going to want to have a leaderboard for, you know, most topics replied to. Collaborative community, Yelp, I already talked about Yelp. They have shared goals. They're all working to create a great database of popular restaurant reviews. But we want to identify members that are dedicated to the site and allow them to be kind of featured, the trusted ones, not necessarily the ones that are, you know, having the biggest impact. Cordial community, eBay. eBay has had a long-standing issue. Everyone knows eBay for their star ratings for sellers, but that's actually one of their biggest problems. Because if you get one red star on eBay, like, that means a lot. If you get three red stars on eBay, good luck selling anything, because people are going to look at that and be like, I want to find out what the negative things are as opposed to the positive. Like, they're not equal weighted. You know, if they have three negative stars, how many positives does it take to weigh that out? Like 100? 1,000? It varies. So if you actually go to their site, you can't see any negative reviews on their seller page unless you click on that little number right there, which will show you, okay, this person's had one negative review in the past 12 months, 245 positive, couple neutral. I think I could trust them. I'll zip through the competitive. Fantasy sports are really common for this. And in combative community, you're trying to basically knock other people off, like a ladder. So if you're like, you know, Warcraft 3 ladder, you know, you want to beat your boy at RTS strategy. A combative community is great for a leaderboard because you're just trying to work your way up and increase your skill as you go. So here's a quick run through on some of the patterns. So here you can see some of the patterns that I've talked through. Top X is similar to a leaderboard where you're showing like the top, like say 10 or so of a given category. Here we have the number levels, ranking, and leaderboards. As you see, as the spectrum goes up, the use of these more competitive metrics also increases. Application that we developed, rolled out about a year ago for classroom discussion. I think some of you have heard of it. It's called Hot Seat. And it uses a few different metrics to help sort through thoughts. So on this particular topic, there's 133 thoughts. If I was just looking at those like chronologically, it would take me a long time to get through all of them, and it's hard to extract the value from that. But here I'm sorting by deep thoughts, so it's showing me the most commented thoughts. And I could probably make, you know, some assumptions about this. Well, this one has 20 votes, but the one after that's got 0 votes and it's got 6 comments. So maybe that's telling me that that person said something that they didn't agree with, or that, you know, there was some issue with it. Like, I'm more interested in this one right here than I am any of the others. And this metric that we're using is helping us sort through all of that information. Whew. Okay, so we've talked about what reputation is, why to use it. Oh. Building the blocks, you actually want to make a reputation system. So what can we do to put these pieces together and actually create something that has some tack to it? So content is king, but your community builds the castle. All right, first thing you want to think about with reputation, what are the inputs? Are the users doing explicit actions or implicit actions? Explicit actions are claims that you make, such as giving something a star, a thumbs up, a thumbs down. Maybe you're writing a review for it. It's something that the rest of the community is able to see. Those are all explicit claims. Implicit claims are things that you do for yourself, but allows the application to detect the value of that content. So I might favorite something that only I can see, but whoever's serving me up that item that got favorited now has a little bit more information about the value of it. Same thing goes with like send to a friend, add to collection, overall. These are all ways that we can implicitly gauge actions on a site. I wanted to show this graph because I think it's kind of important with five-star ratings. We always see like five, I mean, we put a lot of value into them. It's one of the first things we look at. Like whenever I go to a new town, I'll pull up my Yelp application, restaurants nearby, choose a food category, give me the highest rating, that's the one I'm going to. And what we find in five-star ratings is that they usually resemble a J-curve, which is that there's a slightly a larger amount of one stars, and then it dips down two, three, four, and then five is like through the roof. In fact, across Yahoo's properties, their average score was a 4.6 out of 5 on a 5-star rating. There's only one on here that actually has something a little bit out of the norm, and that's their autos page. And the reason why there's so many ones is from fake posts, like people posting like custom cars that are like Google search images. You know, like look at my Mazda, and it's like page 2, right? So the J-curve is actually pretty common in ratings, and some sites have actually started backtracking from their original models and going to ones that are a little bit more linear, kind of like Facebook has become so popular with their liking, yet it's such a simple model. So the old YouTube, I mean, I've already kind of hinted at it, like they had star ratings just as of like a month or two ago. And if you go to YouTube today, they're gone. Because YouTube was like worst of all. Like YouTube's average rating was a 4.8 out of 5 on their videos. So what's the point of having a 5-star rating if everything's a 5-star? How do you really gauge disinterest? Well, what do? They leave the page. They don't leave a rating. Like if you're not interested in something, why do you want to give it 1-star? Maybe it's that bad, but what they found was that people were just leaving the page. So that was telling them more about the videos than anything. And they can track that. They could see, this is a 5-minute video, and the average time on this page is 45 seconds. So maybe there's something, you know, about this that we can, you know, use to affect our popularity score. So yeah, YouTube now has this like and dislike button. And if you look at almost any video, I mean, that's still largely skewed. But at least you're getting a little bit better indication of how many people dislike something versus liking it. All right, so how are you going to output reputation? We've already talked about some of the patterns, some of the inputs that are used for rep. But really, it's the if you're going to put out something simplistic, then don't expect to get much from it. You know, you can look at Twitter and be like, well, that's a reputation system. It's only showing me how many people I'm following, following back, how many lists I'm on. Those are all quantitative items. They're not really meant to give me any value beyond just a quantity. So don't expect to get much from that. Aggregate, you know, like looking, thinking back to like the need for feed thing, like try and think of ways that you can combine the data, but do it intelligently. Choosing and testing the right reputation pattern, don't be afraid to be wrong. It's okay. You might instill a change and have people stop using your site. It's okay to backtrack. I wish Dig would do it because literally that's going to kill the site, and it's unfortunate because they changed their pattern. Don't place outputs out of context. If you have a part of your site that's like deeply nested and you want to promote the videos that, or the content that's on there, don't take that and put that on a completely separate part of your site and not have those two things be related. Find a way to keep the context intact. And don't ask too much for too little, you know. Don't write reviews for reviews. Don't, you know, there's like liking of comments now on Facebook. That was kind of a big leap for them. But really it's like you only want to get as much value as you're putting in. Okay, so a couple of examples of reputation systems. The first one is Netflix. Netflix users. Wow. Do I need to get on? Is Comcast that bad? Yeah, it really is. So Netflix is awesome because it'll, in addition to giving you videos extremely fast at really good prices and putting Blockbuster out of business, Netflix has a really slick recommendation engine. And if you're interested on the actual reviews that go into Netflix, the typical Netflix user reviews about 200 movies. The top 1%, which is a ton of people, is 5,000. I think that's, yeah, so it's 5,000 videos on average, the top 1%. You get into their elite users, there's like about 100 users that have put in 50,000 video reviews. That's like 136 years of like watching movies that these people have apparently experienced. But part of the reason why we're so driven to rate and review movies on Netflix, regardless of whether we've seen them, has to do with their reputation system. It's their recommendation engine that they have. So here's something actual technical is when we get into like personalized recommendations on Netflix. What am I going to do? Throw it on the floor? We start looking at their preference for categories in addition to the actors that are in the movies and how they've rated movies that have the same actors, as well as the directors that were in the movies. Like, Netflix is taking all these things into consideration. Like, when you give, like, Star Wars a 5-star rating, it's not just Star Wars, you know. It's George Lucas, and it's like, it's everyone else that went into that movie. Like, they take all of that into account to build out their recommendation engine, in addition to the community average. Another one, Yahoo Answers. Yahoo Answers, if you guys are interested in this subject, I'd recommend you go to buildingreputation.com. There's a book written by Bryce Glass and Randy Farmer called Building Reputation Systems. And a lot of my material, because, I mean, seriously, there's still so much that needs to be uncovered here, has come from these guys. They're both former employees of Yahoo, where they did just about every form of testing with their users. And they've always been very social sites, but they've got a lot of solid research on this. And they actually patented their design for how they go about reporting offensive content. So it sounds simple enough. You hit a flag, it gets removed from the site. You know, the administrator gets a notification and they say, is this abusive or not? And then they say yes or no, and then it goes back out of the site. Well, that sounds fine and all, except that Yahoo was paying $1 million a year and the average response time was 18 hours to get a reported post actually removed or approved from the site. So they had to come up with a new model for this. Score. And they're like, how about we make a threshold for like abuse scores? So we'll like set our threshold at 3, and then after a post gets flagged, we'll increase the score, and then we'll see if it's above or below the threshold. And if it's below, then we'll like, you know, mark that as a tick. And until 3 people flag it, because there's so many users on Yahoo Answers as it is, then we can get that post removed. So just set like a 3-strike rule. Well, this was all fine and all, except that, well, if I'm a spammer or troll, I could set up 3 fake accounts in no time. Plus, it has nothing to do with the person that's reporting it. There might be some spammer or troll that's reporting my content. It has nothing to do with the reputation of the person posting the content. And it has no past history of their actions within the site. So here's a little bit bigger view of what they actually ended up doing. And I won't get too far into detail. But essentially what they did was when someone flagged a post on Yahoo Answers, it would go through this system that would check and see the past history of that user within the site to see whether or not they had had any posts flagged in the past, what their overall reputation was within the community, the person that was flagging them. If in fact it passed all those credentials, the user would receive something. It would say, you've been flagged for removal from the site for posting this one post. Do you wish to appeal this, or do you wish to accept it? If you accept it, you only lose 10 points from your reputation. If you appeal it, you'll risk losing up to 50 points. So by instilling this model, what they found was that from going to $1 million a year and 18 hours on average turnaround time, it went down to $10,000 a year. This is in customer support help. And it had a 10% margin of error before. It went down to less than 0.1% afterwards. So it went from 18 hours to less than an hour. And what they found was that actually the most abusive content was removed so quickly that you couldn't even refresh the page and still see the post on it. That's how many people were trafficking the site. Where's my hot seat? Oh, I talked about that. OK, so tying it together. Choose the reputation patterns that match your community. Use inputs that promote your goals. Be careful with karma. I've talked a lot about rating content today, but when you talk about actually rating people outside of a highly competitive spectrum, it's very, very risky. Don't let reputation stagnate, decay. We do this on like Need for Feed. It's great for chronological content, for things that are ordered in, you know, over a series of time. Normally you want reputation to decay so that if someone doesn't come into your site for a year, they're not still like the top user. And lastly, being wrong is better than being stubborn. So This last one is Mixable. It's a social application that we developed. It's kind of similar to Facebook, except it ties in all of your courses. So think of like Blackboard meets Facebook, maybe. Maybe that's a better way to think about it. Because it knows all the classes that you're in. And you can immediately connect to all those classes. And then any of your other classmates can also connect to you. So instead of having to friend people and create a whole new social network, you're immediately friends with all these people on Mixable. And it's for every Purdue student, so anyone with a Purdue alias can log in and check it out. But we have a couple of different metrics on here. We have liking on our posts. We also have the commenting. And we have a way for us to sort out posts by being like most recent, most popular. I can't even recall some of the other ones. We have like 5 different ways of filtering out content. But it really dives into some of the ways. I think down the line when we get into actual user contributions, we can start looking at what a user's done in the past and then seeing how to weigh their content based upon that. So you can start marking the people that are most influential in a given class and giving them some precedence so they can be awarded for their contributions. All right, so I've gone over the reputation, what it is, why use it, the building blocks, as well as creating a reputation system. So I think this is a pretty open discussion. There's really no bounds to it. And I'd be happy to talk about or answer any questions and comments that you guys have. Now, this is where the web is going. The more interaction that we can provide, the more engagement that we can provide to our users, the better off they're going to be. Purdue had a project that was developed by a research group called Hub Zero, and it was used exactly for that, for researchers related to, say, nanotechnology, to have a community that they can come into and share their knowledge together. And they developed a point system for that, so that anytime a researcher answered a question or posted a new topic, they would get points. And then they use those points to cash them in for, I think, like t-shirts and other swag that they were putting out. But it's really taken off. In fact, there's so much demand for these hub sites, which are very similar to what you're referring to, that they can barely keep up with them. And part of the reason for that is they have a very active community. They have one of the most active nanotechnology communities in the United States, and it's built on a Joomla platform, but it uses a lot of these kind of like gaming mechanics to help increase engagement and interaction on the site. Yeah, and that's really a struggle with any new site that ties social components into it, is that they're all great in like a blue sky scenario, but what if no one comes? And what if the people that do come don't interact with the site? And that's a very tricky like problem to tackle. The way I see it is we want to lower the barriers to entry as much as possible to make it as easy to get involved as we can. So with like the Need for Feed tool, we have reputation models, but no one has to use it. Like we can build them out from pre-existing data. Okay, well that's a simple example because it doesn't require anything. But with our tools Hotseat and Mixable, what we did was we made it available both on Facebook as a Facebook application, as well as allowing you to insert answers or receive answers through Twitter. So that way they can connect to those services and like log into them and get the convenience of having it outside of its native application, but also get more exposure for it too, for maybe people that aren't familiar with it. If someone has something posted on Facebook wall, hey, I'm on Mixable, come check it out. Well, if they're a Purdue student, hey, that might be the thing that gets them in there, because it's not just about retaining your audience, but it's about like getting the audience in the first place, getting them to come there in the first place. And if you don't have a good means of doing that, then you might be in trouble. It's one of those things where if you go to any site that's like popular now or what's important right now, there's always decay going on, but decay is one of those things that you almost never see. You never see a score that's ticking down by the minute. You don't want to see something that's constantly decreasing. You always want to see something that's either at its current level or increasing as a user. So when we talk about decay, we're usually talking about something that's present in the current moment. But I can't think of a social site that doesn't take decay into account. I mean, only recently did Facebook even implement it so that the most popular showed posts from more than like 2 days ago. I mean, for a while there, it was everything that's happening today. And that was like their decay method was, hey, if someone posted this yesterday and you weren't on yesterday, you might not see it. Then again, 60% of their audience is signing on every day, so they didn't really have too much of that problem. But Dig is the same way. Their stories, if you look at a dig story that's at the top of the homepage and it's got a bunch of digs, and you come back an hour later and it's not there, well, why isn't it there anymore? Is it because the other stories are doing that much better? Or is it because that story has kind of had its spot in the limelight and now it's quickly decaying and moving off the page? So a lot of it has to do, and you can actually do decay based off of user activity. So that if someone comes to your site and they see everything that's hot right now and you can just say that they've been on there for a couple minutes, when they come back, you might use that as a decay method to bump them, to bump all those posts down and show other content for them. I think decay is one of the most interesting parts of reputation because it allows the freshness of the content to really come to life for the user. Like, they don't have to do anything except for visit your site, and you're able to tell, hey, they've seen this, they've seen that, bump this off, bump that off, and bump other things. You know, they'll go up because of that. Yeah, the turnover of content is very important. If you're promoting blog posts that you're writing and you want to, you know, recognize maybe the most popular posts, well, depending on how many blog writers you have, you might do that for the past month before you start dropping those off. Or maybe you just set the model up to be that way in the first place, as you're showing it by the week, by the month, by all time. That's kind of like user implied decay. You know, that's like something where they can specify the time range and not have to deal with the system doing it for them. But decay is one of those like hidden factors, kind of like karma, which isn't shown a lot, but it's in every site that you're using. Any others? Go ahead.
Are you basing your design decisions on these different products that you put together on your own research or existing research? How do you test your designs to see if they're working as you test
them? Well, as far as the research area goes, this is a very new topic. I mean, these models have been around for a while, but it's not a lot of people are assimilating it all and putting all this together. That's why I was really excited to talk about this today. And the site I mentioned earlier, Building Reputation, those guys are at the forefront right now of this area. The book that they wrote, I think it just got published in May of this year. So it's just getting started. There's nothing else out there for it. But if you go to that website, they have like a list of about 50 different research articles and links that they've put together. So I've essentially gone through everything that's out there and looked through all the examples and everything that's available. In terms of our applications, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like not being too stubborn, being willing to test things out and see if they work and adjusting it accordingly. I think like Hot Seat was a great example of an app that from the get-go, it was really important for us to make the vote button the most prominent item on the page, that like really like kind of like raised up, you know, it's got this like geometric shape to it, because we wanted users to interact with that. That's the most important action in Hot Seat, is hitting the vote button. So part of it is influenced by the design decision, in addition to, you know, making the right application choice. But it definitely is a balance that you can strike, but there's a design aspect to it that can also play into it as well. Good question. All right, thank you all for coming. Appreciate your time.